I believe, four agenda items today. The first one is the conservation future tax grant application. So this is a committee's decision to apply for this grant, and I see Rick. So I will recuse myself because I work for the county. It's my understanding that this is a contract with the King County. So Kathy and Cynthia, you guys can ask the question, and once you finish asking your question, you should let Rick know if this is okay with you guys to apply this grant. We'll pick it up from when you guys finish that agenda item.
Do you want me to start?
Yes, go ahead,
Okay,
please.
great. Thank you very much. Yeah, so this is a King County Conservation Futures Trust tax levy, commonly known as CFT, and it's for the acquisition of the property just to the east of the current property, Duwamish Hills, two parcels that we were not able to obtain when we first were looking at buying all the property and did the master plan for. So you can see in the park layout, it's got a big corner missing, and this would straighten up that line and allow us to do phase three of the project some point in the future, which is moving the road over to create a fish habitat area along the where the road currently is. It is a 50% match. That's why you're seeing it. And the cost would be about $182,500 if we were not able to secure the other half of the match, either by a waiver from CFT funds or from through King County levy funds potentially. And there's a couple other sources we'll be looking at. That's the basics of it. I'll be glad to go through the packet. If you want to look at the budget, it's on page 10. If you want to look at the layout of the park and where the parcels, that's on either 18 or 22, depending which one you want to look at. So with that, I'll leave it up to questions.
So you don't have to wait for me on this line. So I think you guys can go forth and back and
Cynthia, I'll start. Just and can just go back and forth. Perfect. Yeah, no questions. So the waiver of the match. I'm sorry, I was sort of not following it. So if we waiver on the match, then we'd get double on 182,500, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, $365,000.
Okay, so that would be. And that's what you're asking for. Is that something that's typical to do, and have you been successful with that?
We were successful in the last CFT grant application, so we were able to get a waiver on that. This one, we were able to check three of the four boxes that would make us automatically eligible. So then it goes to an evaluation committee, and then they have to evaluate it and see if this is it meets their criteria or kind of goes outside of their criteria that they can approve.
So you're three quarters of the way there. Yeah, and then I just have a question I'm going to ask real quick, because so how would you rewrap the road? Would you just straighten it out a little bit? I know that's sort of that's a question about the site, but I was wondering.
Yeah, so if you look at the master plan on page 22, it kind of shows you, we always call it a wiggle, just kind of moves the road over. So you can create space, more waterfront space, and shallow water for the fish to rest in.
So it's actually closer even than that right now to the.
Yeah, it's where that. If you draw a straight line from one end to the other, that's where it is. This goes all the way over into the current water on that picture.
Oh, I see. So you dig that out. I get it. And then it's sort of lighter colored, so that would be new habitat.
Yes.
And okay, all right,
yeah.
That's my other question, and that's all I had. Thank you.
Sure, thank you.
Kathy asked my question, which was about, like, how is the road going to be rerouted? So it's good she went first. I say let's go for it. I know I was able to go on a tour with Rick and actually see the place, and It just makes sense to continue the park in that area. And I was really moved by the partnership with the Duwamish tribe that, you know, they're also in support of the project and working with Forterra, which I think is great. You know, and want it, and I hope that with this, if we get it, that there will be continued and increased partnership with the Duwamish tribe and just that area, because that's the whole purpose of it. So I say yes, let's apply or be a partner.
Okay, thank you. I think we can turn it back to Zach then, Councilmember Edon. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you, Rick. So we are on the second agenda, an approval of ordinance to issue the debt to fund the general fund portion of the public workshops phase one project.
Good evening. Yeah, so before you is an ordinance, there's actually three pieces to this. The first piece is to issue debt to finance the general fund portion of the public workshop phase one, which is to do the tenant improvements on the Heiser building for Fleet. And as you recall, during the last part of last year, with COVID impacting not only our finances, but also the current interest rate market, it was determined that it would be better to finance the general fund portion rather than pay cash for that. And as part of our debt policy, we also look at outstanding debt issues to see if there's any opportunity to refund any of our outstanding debt to save total debt costs over the remaining life of the bonds. And for 2021, we do have two issues that are ripe for possible refinancing. One is the 2011 LTGO. As of May, we have about $1.5 million outstanding, so not a lot. But there is an opportunity to possibly refinance that one and save a little bit in debt service costs. And the other one is the 2014 LTGO bond issue. We have just over $3 million outstanding right now. That goes on a little bit longer, so a little bit more opportunity for savings. The way the ordinance is written right now is it delegates authority to the finance director to do a bank placement RFP to see what's out there for all three issues, and then determine if there are savings in the 2011 issue and or the 2014 issue to go ahead and refund those to save total debt service costs over the remaining life of those bonds, and then issue debt for the public workshop phase two. We're asking that this go to the May 10th Committee of the Whole and the subsequent May 17th regular meeting. And I also want to let you know that we do have Deanna Gregory from Pacifica on the call tonight. She represents our legal counsel. And we also have Duncan Brown and Stephen Amano, who is from PFM. They're financial advisors, and they can answer any questions that are specific to this deal.
Thanks, Vicki.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. Thanks, Vicki. Yes, so I'm Stephen Amano with PFM. We serve as a financial advisor to the city. I think Vicki, you know, covered the plan of finance pretty well there. I think some key components that we'd point out. So, you know, Vicki mentioned the public workshops project. That was really kind of the driver for us to look into financing options for the city due to the relatively small size, about $2.85 million, and a 10-year repayment term. You know, that led us to look towards the, you know, the commercial bank option of the city essentially doing a direct loan with the bank. You know, as Vicki also mentioned, there were two series of bonds that have call dates within, you know, the 2011s have a call date at the end of 2021, and the 2014s had a call date back in 2019. So both of those we took a look at and saw a potential, you know, opportunity to achieve some savings on. The 2011 bonds actually only have three maturities left, two of which are callable. And so, you know, the savings are, we don't expect it's a huge savings number, but given the fact that they are callable at the end of this year and sort of only have a short remaining term, you know, our perspective is that including them here makes sense to see what the city could potentially achieve in terms of savings there. There's not necessarily any commitment to move forward with the refunding if interest rates don't make sense. But at least, you know, asking banks to see what they can propose and what they can provide, if, and then, you know, move forward as appropriate there. The 2014 bond has a number of maturities that are variable rate, so they reset every 5 years. So part of the consideration there is eliminating, you know, refunding that bond for savings at the current rate, but also eliminating any variable rate risk in the future when that bond resets every 5 years. So those are kind of the key components that we've taken a look at, and that's, you know, what's included in the proposed financing here. I'll open it if Deanna or Duncan wants to add anything.
Yeah, if there's anyone else wants to add anything else, this would be the time, or you can add as we ask questions. All right, Kathy, do you have any questions on this? Comments?
Well, we do this from time to time, the refinancing of the bonds, take advantage of opening up that. I don't know all the details, because this isn't my area of expertise, but I get the big picture. And I do understand that this is us giving you authority to do this if it makes sense. And I agree and say, yeah, let's do it.
Great.
I don't have any questions. It makes sense to me to move forward.
Same here. So thank you. I don't have any questions. Go ahead with this, and we'll see what you get once you look at this RFP.
Thank you.
Great.
All right. Let's move on to the next item. Is that still you, Vicky?
This is me, yes. So just as a reminder, to kind of recap, this is an ongoing conversation. We actually started this conversation about service levels way back when the pandemic began last spring. We've had numerous conversations about how the pandemic has affected our revenue sources, not only last year, but well into this year. The effects of the pandemic are definitely part of the budget that was adopted earlier for this year. It is actually in the budget, built into the budget all the way through the end of next year. We've also been mentioning all through this process that we would be coming back to the council, starting with the Finance and Governance Committee, to talk about how do we reprioritize increasing service levels when revenues begin to exceed our current budget, or when we receive other revenue sources as opportunities. And just as a reminder, our staff, all of our departments have been working with less budget, less staff since basically last year. We're still feeling the effects of the furloughs that occurred last year. You'll hear more details about that as we start talking about the permit process. We have Director Gerloff online tonight to talk about some of the permit issues with you. So what I did is I took the memo that we reviewed the second meeting in March and just simply updated that with new information. And if it's okay with you, I'd like to just start walking through that memo, hitting where it's changed. And as we come to new information, go ahead and stop and then talk about those sections until we get to the whole meeting. So again, page 47 of the packet, that's page one of the info memo. That just recaps the budget and service level reductions that are in place. And again, all of our departments have been impacted by this. We did kind of update just a little bit of language on page 48, adding services where we forgot some of that. But some of the big changes come into play at the bottom of page 48 and page 49. We came to you two meetings ago with three priority issues that we knew were going to impact the budget for 2021. And so we wanted to bring that information to your attention immediately. The first one had to do with permit processing concerns due to the impact of vacant and previously frozen positions and the workload. And you had specifically asked for additional information on what was going on with the permit process. And so we've added a couple of paragraphs giving you just a very high level overview. We have one associate planner position that's frozen. Total budget for that is $147,000 for annual savings, annual salary and benefits. Permit volumes have remained high throughout the pandemic, but the planning division does have fewer staff to process those reviews. And in addition, the 10% furloughs that took place last year did have an effect on staff's ability to keep up with the permits that were coming in. That's one of the things that we expected to see, a slowdown in the permit process, permits coming into the city, and we did not see that. And so what I'd like to do at this point is I'd like to ask Nora Gerloff to step in and provide greater information on what's going on with that permit process and give you an opportunity to ask questions on that particular item.
Hi, everyone. Nora Gerloff, and you know, I think Vicki's kind of summarized the answer information that we provided. A more complete discussion of the permit process and all the things that have impacted it over the past, say, year and a half is going to go to Planning and Community Development next week. So there's a whole memo just on that. But here we're really focusing in on the frozen position and the fact that we've there have been a lot of stresses and coupled with high permit volumes over the past year. So I'm happy to kind of elaborate on that if you have any questions.
Yeah, I believe I was the one who asked the question. So kind of looking at when I asked the question as to what are we seeing different in terms of numbers, if the average number that we saw was, you know, hypothetically 5 and now we're seeing 10, just sort of kind of like that type of gauge is what I was looking at. But I'm okay with what I guess Vicki and you have stated thus far. But that's kind of what I was kind of looking at when I asked the question. So
I think we've seen relatively steady permit volumes over, you know, maybe 17, 18, 19 was just a huge year. We had a number of big projects come in and that was a real spike. 20 was a little lower than maybe our kind of historical trend, but not significantly different. And then in that memo that I talked about, we did a comparison of, you know, sort of first quarter volumes. And the first quarter of 2021, again, maybe still a little bit lower than we, you know, generally expected, but not that different, honestly. So things are still coming in. People are still wanting their permits. You know, a little bit off on numbers and revenues, but we could be making that up as the spring goes on, too. It's certainly not a huge drop-off.
Yeah, is there any questions, Cynthia or Kathy? Yeah, go ahead, please. Go ahead, Kathy. I think I see you nodding.
Okay. So you've got these new paragraphs here saying that there's an associate planner frozen and that there's less staff to process permits and do that kind of work and reviews. Can you give a for instance as far as, let's see, it says procedures, let's see, electronic plan review, is that the same as permitting? Or give an example of what kind of delays have been experienced as opposed to what would normally be the problem.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a number of factors. I mean, there was just general disruption, right, around, you know, switching to remote work and figuring out how all of that was coming up with procedures for how do we interact with applicants remotely. So I think there was a fair amount of effort around how do we realign all of our procedures. Part of that was online permit submittal and electronic plan review, which are sort of two pieces of doing business differently when we have to work remotely. And those were things that we've been working on over time and definitely were always a goal. But all of a sudden it was like, okay, within the next week, we are shutting our systems down. We are moving everything over. And it was sort of an all hands on deck effort, as I understand, to really flip that switch and work out all the kinks that happen when you're just jumping into a whole new set of procedures and a whole new process. So that really took a lot of time and effort to make that happen, especially in that really abbreviated time frame. And then doing that at the same time as we did have furloughs and we had the assistant planner left that position, I think, mid-year, like June or July, and then that position became frozen, so we weren't able to rehire for that. So lower staff, unexpected workload, fairly consistent permit applications, kind of all coming together at the same time.
So my question was, like, an example of, did it usually take a couple months and now it was 6 months, or could you give some sort of example like that? Or I know that this was the time you weren't here, but do you know the answer to that?
So I did have our permit coordinator run some kind of average numbers. So it's putting different types of permits together, but giving us a sense for what happened. And so on an average, with permits that take a long time and permits take a short time, we were turning around issuance in about 15 days in 2019, and now we're more like 30 days. So
double the time.
Pretty much.
Okay, thank you. In general, I know that each situation is different, but okay, thank you.
Tiffany, do you have any questions, comments?
Yeah, I liked Kathy's question in terms of trying to quantify what the impact will be, because, you know, I think we all are interested in improving the permitting process, and what we want to know is if we return revenues, if we are able to get this position staffed again, what's going to be the outcome? Like, will it go back to 15 days? Will it go to 10 days because now we have an online system, or you guys have improved the process? Like, could you talk a little bit more about how the process will be improved if we get this one person, like, built?
Right. So the one person is frozen. We also have multiple vacancies in the department that a plans examiner and a building inspector that we just had a very difficult time recruiting successfully for. So we've been short-staffed in that division for quite some time. We also have had 3 of the 5 leadership team positions vacant in the department. So that's also takes some time and effort as people are acting. They're trying to do 2 jobs. So the frozen planner position is one piece of the puzzle. Getting other people in those funded positions is another piece of that puzzle. Ultimately, you know, we've gotten some new permit techs. They're up and running, they're cross-training, they're going to be great, but they're still, some of them have only been there a month, and it's still a big learning curve. So I think that getting the right staff there is helpful. It's probably a 6-month period between recruiting, onboarding, training, and getting people up to speed. And, you know, we're sort of looking at our crystal ball in terms of I'm not seeing a lot of drop off in permit, and permits may even continue to accelerate as hopefully we're emerging from the pandemic. So I'm hoping that we would, if we've had the staffing that we've traditionally had, we would get back to permit review times that were on par with our historical, you know, pretty good times compared to our, you know, neighboring jurisdictions. In terms of permit processing, you know, that said, I'm hoping we don't have additional vacancies that pop up, you know, as we're trying to fill those things in.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Nora. Yeah, I don't think there's any additional questions or comments on permitting, so I think we can move on to the next one.
Okay. So I do want to apologize. I missed one bullet point, which is on the bottom of page 48. The first item was implementation of a previously agreed upon Teamsters wage and compensation study. When we provided this information at the last meeting, we didn't have the full impact. And so we now have that full impact. And there's a chart on the top of page 49 of your packet that breaks down the impact by department. So this is the 21 impact. And because this is adjustments for certain Teamsters personnel, this is ongoing impact. So this is the 2021 impact. It's about $140,000 for the general fund, again, broken down by department. And you can see that the biggest department that has absorbed the biggest hit to this is the community development department. And then the golf course does also get about a $15,000 hit as well. And again, this is an ongoing cost. So any questions on that particular item?
My committee members, any questions on that? Okay. Yeah, no questions on that.
Okay. So the next bullet point down is about halfway down the page, and it looks like, so it's about halfway down the page where We mentioned that we know that there's going to have to be an increase in overtime budget for the fire department due to the minimum staffing settlement agreement with local IFF 2088. And so we've identified what those costs are. A firefighter that comes back on minimum staffing overtime is about $1,500 per shift. A captain is about $1,700 per shift, and a battalion chief is about $2,000 per shift. At the time we wrote this, we estimated that we would need to increase the budget. And again, this is an estimate, by about $200,000. Chief Whitworth has now provided us with a count of how many shifts of overtime he expects to have for the rest of the year. I just received that information today, so we will go ahead and update this to see if that $200,000 is a valid number or if that needs to change at all. And I believe all of City Council does get the daily reports from the fire department identifying how many minimum staffing shifts there are every day. And they've now added what position is called back on overtime, whether it's a firefighter or a captain or a BC. So you'll be able to track the cost of that minimum staffing overtime as we go on. And it looks like Chief Whitworth has just joined us, so if he wants to add anything to that.
Thank you, Director Carlson, and council members for allowing me to weigh in on this. I did dive into that this morning, came up with some numbers. We've been averaging for the first 3 months of the year right around 14 overtime shifts a month. Now, we do have other overtime that is not counted in this particular line item because that would be for our COVID site manager position. So King County is reimbursing us for that overtime when we need to have backfill to cover that position, and that would be Kathy Browning's position. So the numbers that I'm speaking about are just above and beyond that reimbursed overtime. Again, January through March, we averaged right around 14 shifts of overtime for those months, each of those months. And then in April 1st is when that agreement was made with Local 2088. To return staffing levels to 13. That has basically doubled our overtime in April, and it may exceed that double. So right now we're at 28 total shifts of overtime for April, and that will certainly increase slightly. Right now we anticipate two more overtimes, but that really is dependent on the day and how those numbers play out. Then going out to the rest of the year, I've estimated anywhere from 20 to 30 shifts of overtime per month throughout the year. So we will continue to monitor that very, very closely and keep all of you up to speed. We don't require you to try to figure all those numbers out from the daily report, but the daily reports are there for you to digest as we are sending those out every single morning. So if there's any way that we can make those better for you to understand or to see what's going on, please just let us know and we can adjust those. Do you have any questions for me? Okay, thank you.
Okay. So the next topic that I'd like to update you on is the bottom of page 49, the bottom of top of page 50, and that has to do with the state funding the streamlined sales tax mitigation funds. I have an update to the update that's provided in the memo. We have new information that came out very, very recently. It was not available in time for this printing. But what's printed in the memo is the governor did sign the bill effective July 1st of 2021. That the SST or mitigation payments were restored. And so we would receive just over $880,000 for quarterly payments of $220,000 each quarter beginning July 1st. And it would decrease 20% every year. The funding expires July 1st of 2026. So that piece is still valid. The new information is we also are going to receive the backfill from the mitigation payments that the state reduced in 2020, which means we're going to receive another $880,000 and change in the next month or two. And so we'll receive $440,000 in 2021 for the new SST money, plus $880,000 for the backfill. So we have $1.2 million in new revenue for 2021. And so I will update this information to reflect all of that at the next meeting. Any questions on the fantastic news with sales tax mitigation funds?
No questions.
Okay. And I apologize. I meant to share that at the very beginning of the meeting because that was fantastic news, but glad we had an opportunity to get to that. So the other thing that I want to point out is new information is at the bottom of page 51. At the March 22nd committee meeting, you had asked departments to summarize the service level reductions, impact of these reductions, and the cost to restore the services. And so what we've done is we've provided a chart on the top of page 52. And what we've given you there is just a very high level summary that shows by department the budgets for 19, 20, and 21, and then the change in budget from 20 to 21. And so you could see just at a very high level, department by department, the budget reductions. There's three exceptions that we did make an adjustment to, and I want to point those out. So for the finance budget, we did reduce the budget in this chart by $500,000 because that is one-time funding that you authorized that's for the ERP project. And if we left that in, it would look like the finance budget actually had an increase this year, which it did, but it was for a very specific one-time project. And so we pulled that out so you can have a true apples-to-apples comparison. We've also shown the staffing changes. We removed one position from the fire department and four positions from public works. We moved them up to DCD as part of that one-stop permit processing. And so that's why the community development department budget looks like it has an increase of over $200,000 for 2021. DCD actually had a budget reduction, but when you move those positions in, it shows it makes it look like they have a big increase. And so I just wanted to point that out. And the other thing is we did adjust the fire department budget because they had a one-time budget in both 2019 and 2020 of $200,000 each year for Knox Box project. Again, it was a one-time capital project. And so we pulled those out so you have a more true apples-to-apples comparison with the fire department. So that's the very high-level summary of the budget reductions by department. And the committee had also asked for a list of frozen positions. And so we provided that on the bottom of page 52. You'll see some positions are listed twice. I figured that was the easier way to show it. So you'll see anti-crime, TAC team. There's actually two vacant positions. That's why it's listed twice. And with the police department, the cost to restore those positions includes the cost of supplies to outfit the personnel because they have to have specialized equipment. And there's a total number of 17 frozen full-time positions, in addition to extra labor throughout a number of departments that has been either eliminated or reduced. And we've also added an appendix that goes department by department and gives you better information on all of those reductions by department. Any questions on that piece of it before we go into what we'd like to talk about as a possible path forward? Okay, so at the top of page 53, in order to get the discussion started, we thought we would provide a recommended path forward. This is staff's recommendation to the committee to get the process started. So we're recommending we tackle this in three phases. So phase one would utilize sales tax mitigation payments, which we expect to receive very shortly. And again, we'll update this with the additional sales tax money coming in. But what we want to do is we want to target those items that provide the most direct impact to improving quality of life for our community. We've heard very clearly through numerous discussions with council that streets and park maintenance is a priority, especially being able to keep those clean and respond to concerns of garbage, litter, and graffiti. Revenue-backed services, which is a consolidated or one-stop shopping for a permit center, to be able to handle that backlog and get the permit times down for processing those permits. And then some critical service levels to be restored, such as some of the necessary services that were reduced, like cybersecurity contracts in our technology information department, And Joel Bush is standing by to talk about that. But what we've done is we've listed a priority totaling $787,000 that would be handled staff recommendation in phase one. So it would be an estimate to increase the fire department's overtime budget by $200,000, $125,000 for permit activity, which would restore a position, street $167,000 to improve street and bus stop maintenance, $80,000 to park maintenance, $50,000 for rec program assistance. Right now, they're getting a lot of calls on a particular program, and this would help restore some staffing so that they can run those programs, and $25,000 for dart trace cybersecurity. And again, I'm going to let Joel Bush address that particular one, and then $140,000 to address the Teamsters contract agreement. Again, that totals $787,000. That also leaves you some cushion to add your own priorities to that list. And actually, I think at this time, I'd like Joel Bush to go ahead and talk about the dark trace piece.
So the security piece that Director Carlson brought up was our AI. It's a security appliance that relies on AI to detect strange things that are happening on our network based on user profiles. If it detects something outside of the normal activity for someone like Director Carlson, it will trigger our security architect, hey, someone is doing something weird. Would you like to allow it? So if there's like a cryptocurrency attack in our environment and files start getting encrypted, it will stop it because it would be outside of someone's typical behavior to encrypt multiple files. So it's one of those things that we really need as, you know, the security threats are continuing to evolve. That's like a lower on our level of defenses, but it's still a critical one for us.
All right, thank you. Are there any questions, committee members? Go ahead, Cynthia, then I'll go Kathy.
I really appreciate the way that this phase is sort of outlined, that you guys categorized, and I'm pretty sure it's based on the discussion we last had. It just seems like so many meetings ago. In terms of the rec program assistance, is that for like the youth program? Do you know?
I believe so. I'd have to go back through my notes unless Ms. Bianchi knows off the top of her head. We actually discussed that in our administrative meetings, and it is definitely, there's a one specific program that Director Still mentioned. They're getting a lot of calls on it, and I'm drawing a blank. Rachel, do you happen to remember it?
I do, and those of us parents will all know Camp Tuck Willie very well. That is my understanding of what they're working on. There's been a lot of calls to see whether or not Camp Tuck Willie can come back on board. And I do believe they are trying to do that on a smaller scale, obviously, but they are working on that.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was wondering. I was just thinking in terms of summer and childcare type or like summer programming at the parks as parents try to get back to work. I know that's a childcare and just places to put your children so parents can get back to work is really important. So that's my only question. Thanks.
Thank you. Kathy?
Yes. So the appendix with the reduction details was helpful. And I just want to point out a few things here that now that we have that extra backfill mitigation of 880,000, is that how much that we're going to have?
Yep. In fact, I believe the actual amount is $882,597.
Okay. So I would just want to make comments. Thank you.
And we will update this for the next memo.
Yeah. But anyway, it's around that. I know that in transportation, they're talking about the issue of our mitigation traffic mitigating policy that we scrapped. We had to scrub it last year because of budget cuts. And so I think that that would be something important that we could look at. C-Click Fix is also like wrapped in there. And they're going to be, they're having that discussion. I don't know where I put their agenda. But anyway, so the traffic calming program, that was what it was. That identified traffic issues around the city, and they were, that program was just it's gone right now. Funding for community connectors or something similar, I know that they want to revamp that, is gone right now. And then you, recreation and parks, had to start by that, but it looks like we're getting there with that. And then over the years, we've worked so hard to get our code enforcement department up and running and be able to address the issues that are quality of life issues for our residents here. And they have they've got a position frozen and the administrative tech, and there's just no way that they can address all the issues. So that's another one. The rental housing, I was a little concerned to read about that, because it says that they might have to actually waive inspections so that's another one that I would say would be high level. And I understand that this is going to be a council discussion, but I'm just giving for instance, municipal court is down in staffing. Our refugee homeless outreach has been frozen. The person that did that, human trafficking and other things. And also, I don't know, with the public works, maybe that's what some of that's being reinstated. But we still have plenty of things that we can reinstate that are, and I didn't even address the staff concerns, like internal staff concerns, because I'm not as, that's not as much of what I hear about. I hear more about, what about the speeding on my street? I know that we're not fully funded for snow, a snow event, and all these things. So there's plenty of places to bring our service levels back up to what they were before, that we can put that money. And I don't know if you were going to go through the rest of the memo. You probably are. But I talked about some of that.
Yeah, I think all the ones that you listed, Kathy, they're all really great. I think there is, I like how it's phased. One of the things I was going to add in phase one, but I see that's already in phase two, is to see if we can add the economic development plan and what that cost looks like. I don't know if you know what that, how much that would cost would be.
We can come back with the specifics on it, but what I heard was $150,000, but it includes several components that you could choose to do something less if you didn't want to spend $150,000 for the full meal deal. So we can come back with what those component costs would be.
Yeah, so I would prefer that it goes through in phase one, and when you come back and see, and the number that we're working on phase one is the 1.2, correct?
Correct. And if I could also say that phase one, we're looking at more as ongoing revenues, with the idea that because this is sales tax mitigation payment, we know it's going to go on at least through 2026. With it is declining, but we're hoping that will be kind of the bridge until our regular ongoing revenue streams return to more normal levels on a more stable basis. So as the streamlined sales tax mitigation starts to decline, we're seeing increases in sales tax revenue, admission tax revenue, et cetera, that will replace that decline in the streamlined sales tax. So we're looking at phase one as being more of those ongoing cost projects. Phase two, and we could start phase two almost immediately because we're gonna be receiving half of the $4.43 million in a couple of months. We're looking at that as truly one-time projects. And that's why the economic development plan was down there. We could definitely do that in the next couple of months, but we're just trying to segregate ongoing costs from one-time costs. And the economic development plan would be one-time. And so phase two would be the American Rescue Rescue Plan funds, $4.43 million, half received this year, half received next year, has to be all spent by the end of 2024. And our recommendation is those would be for one-time projects. And we listed a few there, but as you know, we have ongoing unlimited needs. There's many, many other one-time projects we could add to that list. And then phase three would be addressing increasing ongoing service levels once revenues exceed our budget and have stabilized at predictable levels that we can actually forecast out into the future. So that's kind of the three phases that we've identified. Again, phase one would be the highest priority, and we would ask that at least the $787,000 that we've identified here move forward to the full council for discussion and approval, because the sooner we could get agreement to move forward on that, the sooner we can start addressing the streets and parks needs. And then obviously continue discussion for the additional sales tax mitigation funds that we now have available to us, and then the one-time projects that we could identify in phase two, have a little bit more time to work through those.
Go ahead, Cynthia. I have some additional questions I wanted to also ask Vicki. Go ahead.
I guess we're on our second go around now. I feel like I'm comfortable moving forward with the $787,000, but I think it would be important to update the memo, one, to include the total that we're going to get through the streamlined sales tax funds, so that they could see that this is just a portion of the total that we're getting. So we're only making decisions on these couple of items because these are the biggest priority right now, is my understanding from what I'm hearing from you, Vicki, but that there is additional time for us to decide sort of where the rest of the pot of the phase one funds go, as well as phase two and three. And then I'll just add, it would be also nice to see the cost for the items that are in this appendix? Yeah, in the appendix, it would be nice to have just like estimates for how much, because I think we'll need that as we go further along in this process.
Of course. Happy to do that.
And that's all for me for this round.
Thank you. Kathy?
Yeah, I think I said everything that I was going to say. And yes, I totally agree. We need to have lots of discussions on regarding updating exactly what projects we go with. And so what I said was just like preliminary, this is what caught my eye, and I'm really open to the discussion that we're going to be having. Thank you.
So I was going to ask you the one-time revenue, specifically the American Rescue Plan. There's two installments. First installment, when do we get that?
We'll get in the next couple of months. Because we're a, let me go back to the, I don't want to use the wrong term. We're a, what are we? We're a something city. We're not a, hang on.
Non-entitlement city.
Thank you. Too many words in front of me. Because we're not a non-entitlement city, the federal government will pass the money to the state of Washington, and the state of Washington will then pass the money off to us. And they have a certain time frame that they have to deliver those funds to us, but they can also claim significant need or a significant impact to get those funds out to the state or the city so they can actually have a little bit extra time. We would receive it sometime in the summertime.
Okay.
At the latest.
All right. I think that's all I have. I think we'll keep talking about this. So did you want to move on to the first phase on the next, is it 510 that you wanted to move on to that one? Move forward?
Yes, that would be our preference, to at least address those immediate needs, because we know those are high priority. We've been hearing about that all through these discussions, and at least address those needs. And we will continue this discussion for the rest of the sales tax mitigation funding at the next finance and governance meeting. But if we could address The phase one high prior to $787,000 at the May 10th, 2021 committee of the whole meeting, that would be wonderful.
Okay. Yeah, I'm comfortable. I did want to stick into the, I wanted to add the economic development plan since we have some, but I understand the logic of separating both ongoing and one-time revenue. But I'm comfortable moving that forward. How about my committee members? Okay. I think that's we can do that.
Wait, can I just ask?
Yeah.
I know, because I was interested in the plan as well, and I mean, is there a possibility that is there even a possibility of moving it up, or just like keep it in the phase that it's in now? Like, or is there a possibility to move anything up to the May 10th? Or is that just this is the administration's recommendation, and anything we do as a council is a separate process?
We just provided you a recommendation. If you have some one-time projects that you'd like to move up immediately, I mean, you definitely have about $400,000 that can as play within that SST money. It's just, again, phase one is just separating one-time projects from ongoing costs. If there's an interest in moving up the economic development plan, there's definitely funding available for that through the SST funds. And in finance, we'll be keeping track of what's been identified as ongoing costs versus one-time costs.
I just want to jump in here and say, if you want to move up the economic development plan, we can do that, and we'll still take it out of the one-time cost, right, of the American Rescue Plan. So we want to make sure the council, you know, you set the priority and the policies here. So if you want us to say, put it on the list for the 10th, we'll put it on the list for the 10th. You don't need to worry about which bucket it comes out of.
She said that much better than I did.
Yeah, I really want to move it up because I think we've been talking about this line item for I think a couple years now, and the sooner that we do that, the better. I obviously want to move it up, but I just still don't. Why can we not use the bucket for the SST versus just the one time? And I certainly don't care which bucket we use, but it just kind of makes sense if we have that mitigation tax now and we have available funding, why can we not just use that one time? Or just kind of, I don't know, in your finance world, it does something else, and I want to respect that and take your recommendation.
So, I, Ms. Bianchi stated it perfectly. If this is a priority that you'd like to see added to the May 10th, we will make that happen.
And we can still use, even if you push it up to May 10th, we can still use the American Rescue Plan for those to do that, because by the time everything, you know, gets in the queue, that one-time money will be in, we will have that one-time money.
Right.
So I think it's just it's a question of priorities. What I'm hearing from at least two of you is, that's a key priority, so let's put that in the May 10th discussion and have the full council discussion and get moving.
Yep. Okay. Is there any other additions, comments?
What about, if that's the case, what about, Kathy had mentioned the rental housing program and the units that are due for rental inspection backlog. Like, what do you guys think about that one?
Yeah, so we could basically add a few things on this, but I don't know how much we could, because Kathy listed a lot.
Do we want to wait on, we'll just wait with the rest of the council on those?
No, I mean, we, as a committee, we could say, here are the things that, you know, staff came up, we added X, Y, and then we can have the discussions on there. Go ahead, Kathy.
Yeah, I think that the way that we might want to look at this. Okay, so this is on page 53, right? These were the priorities that staff has identified with the path forward, and then they've given their reasons why this would be the path forward, and really good reasons. And some of them are like Teamsters contract. We don't have a choice, right? That's just going to happen, right? And fire overtime. So maybe the way to frame this is what staff doing the day-to-day operations of the city and trying to, and this is based on what they see. This is what needs to get done. Absolutely. Some of them are absolute. I mean, for example, permit activity. We've said we want to have this issue improved, right? So here it is, to be able to do whatever needs to be done to improve permitting. And so these are really responsive. This is a responsive list from staff. Now, if we want to talk at the same time about these other issues, I think that's really reasonable, but that is also reasonable that we do it with all seven of us, right? So this might be a longer discussion, but it might just be how it works here, is that we see that this is the staff identified things, like I said, because they've been responsive to us and our comments, but make room for discussion about these other items as well. So that would be my way of framing it. And then, Zach, that means that you're the economic development plan needs to be in the memo somewhere as one of the identified things as well. It's not in the memo right now, is the thing. And so, and I would be happy to look at this holistically. And then it's going to be a little cumbersome about prioritizing. I think we need to respect what staff is doing here, but I think it's going to end up going there anyway, right? We all of a sudden we started going there. I went there right away. Well, what about this and this with the extra funding, right? So we need to be prepared for that. And my suggestion, just right off the top of my head, is, okay, so the first $787,000 goes here, and then this is over here. But I'm open, just like I said, I'm open to whatever conversation that we have as a group. So so basically the change there, Zach, would be to make sure that the economic development plan is identified in the memo as one of the things that we would be looking at looking at during the discussion.
Sure thing. Thank you, Kathy. I think that's all the comments. The last thing I wanted to ask the committee or just even the staff to kind of get your thoughts. American Rescue Funds, what do you guys think about the idea of soliciting feedback from the community as to what they would like some of these funds to be spent on? I know that creates time and effort, what are you guys' thoughts? I'll start with the community members, and maybe if staff wants to chime in on that. I see your hand, Cynthia, go ahead.
I think they could answer your question first, and I'm separate. I have another question after your question.
Okay.
So Zach, I'll talk. I'd have to think about that just because of the logistics of it. I'd have to think about that.
Yeah, and if I, usually like during the budget process, we do ask the community as to, the community kind of participates, and then I figure this is a one-time item and trying to figure out how do we interject a community feedback. So I don't know if there's any feedback from the staff.
So council members, we're happy to do that. Sort of also with the understanding that your staff are running on fumes a little bit right now with everything. And so it would not be, it would likely not be an in-depth process. We do have a long list of things, particularly on the one-time side of the house. Remember, you do have a policy that you use one-time funds for one-time events, right? So the American Rescue Act funds wouldn't be supporting bringing new staff on unfreezing positions, right? But to Councilmember Hogarty, sort of went through that long list of things that you all have identified, and you know, including the traffic calming and other things that. So I just want to manage expectations, right? We are happy to do things, but also I think it is important that all of you are aware. Just you know, to Nora talked very eloquently about this in terms of the permit section, but I'm sure Chief Drever could talk to you on police and. Vicky could talk to you about finance, just about how staff has very up on their capacity load these days. So,
no, thank you. That's very helpful. Okay. All right. Cynthia?
So I like what you're saying, Zach, and maybe, you know, we could use the survey results. The results of the survey that we took last year when asking the community about the budget, and maybe see if Laurel or could do like a memo about it, or like an analysis of these were the top things that came out. Because I think I remember it was human services, it was parks, it was street maintenance, you know, and it was community, you know, policing. There were a number of different priorities that the community identified, and that was just taken last year. So it might be still useful now to utilize that versus, you know, having staff do another survey. The other thing that I wanted to mention was I would really like to see input from human services. One of the things I'm wondering is whether we should consider increasing the cap on the assistance that we've provided folks, given the current situation that we're in. And then another thing I would like the city to consider is using some of the one-time funds on utility assistance and almost like relief from people from the debts that we have in our utilities, you know, not requiring people to have to contact the city requesting it, and actually just providing that relief with those funds. So just something to consider that I wanted to put on the table, but it would be really great to get input from human services in terms of if lifting the cap or providing additional assistance in that area, maybe even mental health resources for the community.
So I can answer that. Human services would be interested in seeing the cap lifted. I think if you've seen the weekly coronavirus reports, we do put in there kind of what they're seeing on the ground, and lifting the cap is something that they would be supportive of. There are a lot of other funds out there that are exciting and definitely getting into our community. Sorry, but there's the pandemic puppy. Lifting the cap would be something that would be of interest to that group. So thank you for that.
Go ahead, Kathy.
Thanks. Now, one thing, so now I'm thinking about the community input for this extra $1 million. And what I'm thinking is a lot of the things that we need to refund are sort of invisible to the community. So they wouldn't even know to highlight them. For example, if we start talking to the community, they'll be seeing the things that we see, but we are elected to run the city and make some of these decisions because they don't know what's happening on the inside. For example, community connectors have been removed. We're probably not going to hear anything about that as a priority. Or anything to do with permitting or even an economic development plan or the rental housing plan, we're not going to hear anything about that from people because it's really sort of, they don't know about it. They just know that things run. They don't know that that's how it runs. A court is down. They won't know that. Human trafficking and drug trafficking, to me, human trafficking is really important. They don't know that these things are there to say that we need to keep on top of them. So at a certain point, I think we need to just say, we could take a touch back on the survey from the budget before, but we have programs that need reinstating. And this is something that they're not sitting through a meeting of what's happening inside of the city. And I think we're at that point right now where we need to restore services. And this isn't adding services. So it's always good to get community input, but what I'm seeing here is us doing some things that we have expertise to do. When we when we represent the city, we can go out and ask people. I don't want this to get bogged down. I want things to get certain. And at the same time, we still, of course, need to be responsive to the community. So let's get that balance in there. Is what I'm thinking.
Thank you. I brought this up because, you know, I don't want, you know, go forth and back on this, but I think you bring really good points, and I also want to be informed of what our communities are feeling and what is really important for us is always to check back and see, if you have this additional one-time funding, where do you want us to spend it on? Well, what is important to you, right? So, but great idea, Cynthia. I think, going through that survey is best avenue. I hear you, Rachel, and I respect that, and thank you for being candid. I wouldn't want staff to burn another things when they have really a lot of things going on. So, maybe the best path forward is to look at that survey results and kind of lean into it and figure out how we could use that. Go ahead, Cynthia.
Maybe I'm thankful that I'm on this committee so I could get the information first before it goes to the council of the whole. I'm hoping, you know, I don't know, there's something we could do to let the other council members know that this is coming. I think it's important that they should look for this so that they could think about these things before the meeting and just have advanced time. I'm interested in, I don't know what the process would be to request Laurel support to provide a more like a memo almost on the survey that we got last year, because that I think that would be helpful information so that we know that the decisions that we're making are aligned with what the community at least wanted last year. And then the last thing I'll say is, you know, if any of you are interested in doing some sort of town hall, maybe that's one way that we could connect with the community. And, you know, I agree with you, Kathy, that there's a lot that we are, there's a lot of information that we get as council members, because we're here every Monday, like getting the lowdown, and you've been a council member for so long. But I also think it's our obligation to bring the community along so they sort of understand these nuances that that we're privy to. And, you know, I'm just saying, I agree with you, Kathy, but I also think that it might be a good opportunity for us to touch base with the community, maybe through like a virtual town hall. And I would be happy to do that with any of you guys.
Yeah, thank you, Cynthia. So is Laura in the meeting? I don't know if she wanted to respond to that.
Hi there. Thank you, council member. I'm hearing your comments, and yes, I think that it would be simple to either add on to this memo or maybe attach a new summary to the memo. I can work with administration. I do want to thank Councilmember Hogarty for her points about what the community knows to weigh in on, because as a reminder, that survey really pulled people on the external facing programs, and internal services was left out, because we were trying to gauge their feelings on the programs per priority-based budgeting. So all that is to say, yes, we can provide a summary of those results as part of this conversation, with that caveat that there's a little bit of limitation there. If that makes sense, I'm happy to do that.
Great. Thank you, Laura.
Sure.
All right. I guess we can move on now. I think we're all in alignment moving forward with phase one, including economic development, and then and we will have more discussions on 5, 10. Correct?
Thank you.
All right, so let's move on. Let's move on to budget item 1D, February 21 general and fund update.
Great. Council members, hello. It's Tony Cullerton, Deputy Finance Director, and I'll be giving this update. This will be a quick report. So looking at the general fund expenses for the period ending February 28, 2021, the general fund expenses were about $10.2 million. And when comparing this to the same period last year, that's a reduction of almost $415,000. $414,903, which equates to about a 3.9% reduction, almost 4% reduction in expenses. And then when comparing the 2021 allocated budget to the same period, January, February, it's about a $1.4 million reduction, which is almost 12.2%. When we look at the individual departments' budgets, all the departments were under budget with the exception of fire. As of February 28th, fire was over budget by about $70,415. We heard from Chief Whitwer a little bit about that. I also checked into this a little bit and found that a lot of this overtime is going to be reimbursable. It has to do with the repeater issue at the mall. We can go into that in more depth if you want, but that money does get reimbursed to us. So I guess I'd say the short news is things are looking pretty good for the general fund. And that's the end of the report. We'll take questions.
All right. Thank you, Tony. Are there any questions, my committee members, comments? All right. There are no comments or questions. That means good. Thank you for the report out.
Thank you.
That is the end of our agenda. Are there any miscellaneous? My committee members. No. Okay. Well, thank you. We are adjourned. See you on the other side. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.